Welcome into the first ever Extra Ice Time here on the 98.5 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston joined by Billy Jaffe, and this is going to become a regular thing during the playoffs for us.
Let's hope it's a long time thing.
I'd like to go well into the summer. That'd be great.
That would be very nice. Nothing like being in the bunker here, you know.
In sports, this to me is the most exciting part of the year for any hockey fan. You know, we know that the NHL playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs, trumps to me the NFL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, baseball, like it, because the best of seven series in the NHL are truly a battle of will.
They seem to be the most unpredictable.
Yeah.
They do. And we've talked at length in the past on our regular Saturday show about how the home ice is important, but it's nice, but I don't have the percentage of home ice wins. I'm not into that stuff. I mean, maybe I should be. Maybe I should be more analytical. Not against them, but it doesn't seem to matter, especially in the first round. Because the first round is honest to God, if that's not the most enjoyable, it's freaking crazy. It really is. It really is.
Well, and it's just the sheer volume of games, too. I mean, you get, you know, we'll talk a lot about the Bruins and Maple Leafs, obviously, but you've got eight series going on all at once. You got multiple games pretty much every night. Mm-hmm. You've got West Coast games to watch. So if you really want to dig in and you're up until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning every day, I know you are, up until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning at least every day for the next couple of months.
So. I know. Yeah. I've got, we're sitting down doing this on Wednesday morning. So before the Thursday game for the Bruins, but I've got a few family commitments Wednesday evening, and I'm like, geez, I don't know if I'll get to, I think I'll be done with them by 8:15. I'll miss a little bit of the early games, but then yes, I will be up late. So the circles under the eyes are coming up. But on this show, what we're looking to do, this is hockey talk. It's not even a show. It's hockey talk. It's going to be quick. It's going to be hard hitting in the sense of we hope just to get in and out and a lot of topics here. Take what we do on Saturday mornings, which is more of a, I don't want to say it's an interview show because it's not. But it's segments and everything here. We're going to look to have John Shannon, for instance, for today from Toronto, come in and give us 5-6 minutes on the Maple Leafs and what to expect out of them, what he really thinks of them. We'll talk with Matt Dolloff, who does a little writing here, and just get into his deep dive, and we'll try and break down. Let's not try. Let's do it. Let's just break down. Let's get after it. Let's talk about Toronto, Boston. What many people, self-included, RJ, think is going to be the best first-round series because the storylines are there's so much to talk about.
Well, you got two teams with over 100 points meeting in the first round.
Yeah,
and I mean, so that's ridiculous.
Right. Let's not even, okay, we both think it's crappy that the NHL does it this way. Now, let's address it for 1 second and then move on because it's not going to change, okay? We all want the league. Well, I won't speak for you. I'd like the league, and I've said this since forever, go to a different format. I'm not a believer in the divisional thing. I think 1 through 8 is the way you should do it. It should be the one seed from the top seed in the conference. And then if you win your division, you get the number 2 seed. Mm-hmm. And then 3 through 8 is based on points. To me, that's the most equitable. I understand they want divisional rivalries. That's garbage. You create rivalries for playoff matchups.
By game 2 or 3 of the series, everybody's already tired of each other,
exactly.
So regardless of who it is.
Yeah, you know, if it was Boston, New Jersey, for instance, Boston and New Jersey really don't have a rivalry. They don't. And so it would be nowhere near as sexy as this rivalry, Boston and Toronto. However, by the second or third game, it'd be stuff.
You know, without playing through the division, you manage to build up rivalries with a lot of teams anyway, right? Because of the playoffs. And you'll still bump into the Canadiens on years when they're not in the basement.
Right.
You're still going to play them. It doesn't need to happen every single year.
I agree.
And in fact, it might even take away the specialness of it if it happens every single year.
I'm with you. So the fact that the Bruins and Toronto, two of the three, four best teams in the conference, two of the three top teams, are going to be out in the first round. And then, so now you have one of these two teams is going to, in theory, play Tampa. In theory. I don't think it's going to be as easy as people think. Maybe you don't. Maybe you don't think it's that way. But I think it's going to be a tough series for Tampa. I do. But my point is, two of those three teams by the second round are gone. Don't you want to give your team the best chance?
You've got arguably, you know, two, if not three, of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, and there's only going to be one left by the time you get through the second round.
And people say, well, it's just this year. But it always seems to be just this year, meaning it's just this year. Make it the most equitable, 1 through 8.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to what's actually going to happen here.
Yeah.
First and foremost, a lot's been made of the way that this Bruins team ended the season.
Yeah.
You know, they went into a little bit of a skid there. They had an opportunity to win the Eastern Conference and beat Tampa Bay. Couldn't get the job done against Florida. I'm not that concerned about that just because of the way that it happened. I felt like, you know, we looked all season long at that schedule starting March 1 and through the end of the season. And then you added on an extra game at the end because of the snow. It was going to be tough. And they had some significant injuries through that span. They managed to weather the storm, and then they got into April. And it felt to me like they ran out of gas. You know, I go back to last Sunday against Philly, and Bruce Cassidy was interviewed during the game, and he said, it looks like we're running on fumes. And it did.
Mm-hmm.
And they managed to come back and get a point in that game, but for the rest of the week, it felt like they were running on fumes. They didn't have that same jump. When they got behind, they weren't able to find that next gear. And so I say I'm not worried about that because a nice long break here before you get to game one should help rejuvenate the team and get their legs back underneath them.
Well, I sure hope so. That's the hope. This team, I would have loved to have seen them actually had 2 days off from the ice instead of just one. I thought maybe on Tuesday some players would get that off. Now they're going to have practice Wednesday, and then they're going to have an optional morning skate on Thursday, but still game day, it's different. You know, your body, the adrenaline's already running. It's going. Would have loved to have seen them had 2 full days off, but I guess you just can't do that because you're right. They were running completely. They're on empty. That tank was, and you know what ends up going when the body is on empty mentally, it ends up being even worse because you then try, your mind starts playing games with you. Okay. I got to work harder. I've got to do more. I'm telling you, I could see guys that I was talking to guys yesterday in the locker. I was talking to a bunch of players about it. I guarantee you most of the guys went out there on Sunday and early on, and if you've admitted it, that their legs felt like crap. They're like excited. They understand what the game means. They get out there in the first few shifts. They're like, oh, my God, my legs, they're brutal. And then they couldn't kind of get into it. And then the mind takes over and plays mind games, RJ. Next thing you know is you're trying to do too much. How often did we see that from Bergeron, especially Marchand and Pastrnak? Because they said, well, I'm going to take over. I'm going to do it. You can't. The mind takes over and it does bad things to you on the ice. You got to come out there. You got to keep playing that system, that style that got you there, but you can't do it when you're physically and mentally or emotionally fatigued. They were incomplete. I mean, they were below empty. Now, all right. I don't think it's about a turn off and turn on. I still think they cared. I just don't think they could do it. Now they got to get themselves ready because this is going to be an incredibly energized, high-paced series. Can they get themselves ready? Back to that re-energized, refueled by Thursday night.
All right. Well, one guy who should not be on empty right now is Tuukka Rask. They set a number at the beginning of the season where they wanted him to be starts-wise.
Yeah.
They've had to exceed that in the last few years, and you could see down the stretch that he was worn out. This year, they were right around the number, right? Because of Khudobin, he was able to get his rest, and he should be ready to go. But there's still a lot of questions among people around here about whether he's really the guy who can do this for you.
Do you really think it's questions? Or do you think it's just comments? I mean, honestly, you do a lot of stuff in this town. Is there anybody who takes more crap than Tuukka Rask?
There's not many.
On the Bruins? Yeah.
No, definitely not.
Definitely not on the Bruins. I mean, Krejci takes none now compared to what he used to, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. Tuukka takes more crap than anybody. I'm like killing myself over this. I told you this. I'm an idiot. We chatted for about 5 to 6 minutes. It was a really good interview. Not that I was a good interview, it was that Tuukka really was just himself, whatever. And I completely screwed up. I was using this new app on my phone and I screwed it up. So I'm sorry. Because I was talking to him about this, about being ready and being handling the pressure and being the Boston Bruins netminder and how he deals with it and everything. And fatigue should not be an issue at all. He seems in a good space. He loves the pressure. He says, "I, you know what? I've learned how to deal with it. I'm fine. I want it." You know, he's good with it. He's good with it. You know, to him, it's just, he's one of the guys, he says. I'm just one of the guys on this team. So he's got to be sharp. He's got to be better than Freddie Anderson. And Anderson's a good goalie. Anderson's faced the most shots of anybody in the NHL this year. He's one of those goalies, though, that seems to be better with more shots that he faces. He's comfortable with that. So it's sometimes not about quantity, but it's about the quality. So, but Tuukka Rask, to me, is going to have to be, I mean, this is, is it an understatement to say that this is a potentially career-defining playoff for Tuukka Rask?
Not at all. Not at all. I
that's
think,
crazy.
Well, and that doesn't necessarily mean they have to win the cup, but it means he has to be one of their best players. He can't falter in big situations. I mean, we hear it. You talked about how much crap he's taken over the years. So much of it is based around the end of that final series against Chicago.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, literally a snapshot of his career as people look at it and say, he let you down in the biggest of situations, which if you go back and watch that, you know, he didn't. The team had some major breakdowns at the end of that game.
Right.
And it's the shock and disappointment of it all has kind of fallen on Tuukka Rask for a lot of fans. If they don't win the cup this year, I hope it doesn't get, I hope it's not because of him, right? I hope it doesn't fall on his shoulders. It's, look, well, sometimes the other team's better than you, and it doesn't necessarily all fall on the goaltender. And I feel like a lot of people around here believe that a goalie should never give up a goal.
I know.
You know, and if he does, he's at fault.
Never an average
goal. If you lose 1-0, it's got to be the goaltender's fault.
Right. How did he not make that one save?
Right.
Right. Forget the other 34 that he made. How did he not make that one save? I get it. It's easily the most argumentative topic of this team. If you, it's kind of like there's really not much 50-50. It's, I mean, it is 50-50. You either love or can't stand. It's what it comes down to.
How much confidence do you have in him?
I have confidence in him. How much? I mean, I'm number, how to quantify. I have confidence in him, but I'm going to give you a crappy caveat. But he has to come through this year. How's that? Has to, meaning I do. I believe in him. I've been a believer in him. I understand. I talk to guys that play in front of him, and they have the confidence, and that to me is the real measuring stick, because I can sit here and tell you what I see from my perch, and the game's real easy for my area, but I can tell you when it's all said and done, it's the defensemen that play in front of him, the forwards that play in front of him, that, you know, when I'm having kind of off the record or outside the zone conversation type thing, they believe in him, they do, and you know, there's only a couple of goalies out there that I guess you would say, it's from the outside looking in, I'm bouncing around here because I'm trying to get the right word. From the outside looking in, there's only a couple of goalies, I think, in the entire National Hockey League. You say, oh, yeah, I mean, no matter what, it's not his fault. But wait a second. Carey Price at times was bad this year.
Sure.
Was bad. Jonathan Quick won 2 cups, no doubt. He hasn't been great at times. I mean, at times he's spectacular. So has Tuukka Rask been. And other times he's just good or average. So is Tuukka Rask. I think when it's all said and done, I have a lot of confidence in him. But I want to see him do his part this year. You can't have, the team can't have bad starts, and Tuukka can't have a bad start.
Well,
oh, mercy.
I mean, and that's an underrated part of it, too, I think, among a lot of people here, is the team in front of a goaltender, it matters. You know, again, you can't be hanging your goalie out to dry night in and night out and expect that he's going to single-handedly carry you, especially once you get into the playoffs, because he's not going to be able to make every save. So let's talk a little bit about the guys in front of him.
Yeah.
All right. A lot being made here over the last couple of days about what the lineup's going to look like.
Yeah, I know. Let's go right to the one you want to Ryan Donato.
Ryan Donato.
Right.
You know, comes in, makes a splash right away.
Big splash, right.
Young, exciting kid.
Water
love his
park
game.
Splash. Huge one. What are those water parks called?
A giant cannonball off the high dive splash.
Exactly.
But
an educated one because he went to Harvard.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, you know, we don't all have to be, you know, stupid frat boys, right? So What's Bruce Cassidy thinking in not putting him in the lineup, if indeed that's the case in game one?
Well, it's nothing against Ryan, and that's the thing that people are having a hard time digesting, I think, is that they're saying, well, wait a second, how do you not see what he's done? But he has to do, it's more than just goal scoring, and goal scoring just at the end of the season compared to what the NHL playoffs will be about is a different factor. Now, here's the thing. If it's going to be Rick Nash coming in, which it looks like it's going to be, you're not going to put Ryan Donato on a third or fourth line. You're just not. You don't. It's not the designated hitter like in baseball, because Donato, you're going to need that third and fourth line, which the Bruins have been missing desperately the last 2 weeks. We've talked about it on our show on Saturday all the time. There's a hole there on that. It's not the same. They get some of their identity from that third and fourth line. And since Riley Nash has been out, to me, that's the biggest void, third line center, right now. That has really hurt this team, because that third line, if it's not matching up against somebody else, top line, it's actually getting opportunities because of their repetitive, in the most complimentary way, their relentless repetitiveness. They get out there, they do it the right way, they win wall battles, they get to the front of the net, and then they are solid in their own zone, especially when it was Heinen, Nash, and then Backes. Hopefully he can get back. It doesn't look like Riley's going to come back. So now you bring in Rick Nash. Are you going to pop David Backes to the middle on the third line in the center spot? He'll take faceoffs, yes. But you going to ask him to be your main center on that third line? No, I'm not. He doesn't drive the line. He works better on the wall. He works better off the wall to the front of the net. He works better skating-wise as a winger. So it's a long way of getting back to your original question. I can't have Ryan Donato right now. I sure as heck hope I can in the next year or two be a reliable defensive enough player, or enough of a defensive two-way player, stronger physically and a little stronger mentally. And I love the kid. I think he's going to be there. But right now, I can't ask him to either be the center on the third line or even a winger on that line. I think if I'm asking them to go match up, if there's times that they decide to go match up against Austin Matthews' line, are you ready to put Ryan Donato out there? Even though they're basically the same age.
Right. That's asking a lot. It's asking a lot of any young guy. But here's where I think that because your explanation makes sense, but my head says, well, does that mean we don't see Ryan Donato for a while then? Because
somebody told me last night,
if the top two lines stay healthy, what you're telling me is he doesn't fit on the third line.
Right away to start the series, I don't know if he does. I mean, somebody used an analogy the other night, I'm not stealing it, but I'm throwing it out there. Is he the Tyler Seguin of 2011? Is he the guy that comes into the lineup, not right away, but comes in and then provides us the impetus, the spark that they need in certain ways? Don't know. But if I think that I know what I need from that third line, and it looks like right now that Noel Acciari will slide up to play the middle with Backes and Heinen. I mean, last year, remember Corrali and Backes had chemistry on a so-called third line in the playoffs? I thought maybe they'd move Corrali up, quite honestly, and then put Acciari, keep him on the fourth. But anyways, there seems to be a feeling that this is what they need right now. That I think we know what the first two lines are. I think the third and fourth line give the Bruins more identity than people realize.
Well,
more comfort.
They are unbelievably important to this team.
Yes.
And they have been all season long. You know, look, around the league, you hear about the Bergeron line, and it's probably the best line in hockey this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. But that third and fourth line depth and being able to roll four lines every night has been essential to this team's success.
I wonder, and I'm just spitballing here, all right? I want to see how Rick Nash is. I want to see what kind of interior play he has. I want to see what kind of jam he has. You ready for this? It wouldn't surprise me, and I hope I'm wrong, because I want Rick Nash to shine. I do. I don't care what ends up happening to Rick Nash after the Stanley Cup playoffs, meaning contract-wise, because that's not my thing right now. I want him to play so darn well that he's going to get another nice contract somewhere. But if he doesn't, does Ryan Donato take into his slot? That type of player, you know, power play up there. He's had chemistry with Krejci. But now, again, you're asking him to play the right side in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So we can't, you know, The best spot for him is left side.
Sure.
But the best spot for Danton Heinen's on the left. Jake DeBrusk has had a ton of success on the left, and sorry, you're not getting Marchand out of the left off of Bergeron's line. So right here, right now, I think this is what you have to do with Ryan Donato. You say, we love you. You're going to get a role. You're going to play. Be ready.
Well, and that's, look, we've talked about that defensively, and with the Carlo injury that popped up even before the playoffs start, about having to have depth and having to have guys who are NHL ready that you can plug into the lineup when guys get hurt, because it's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when guys start missing games. And Ryan Donato, as you said, much like Tyler Seguin, is going to have to draw into the lineup one of these days.
He will. Yeah, my guess is, you know, between now and Thursday night, if health, being, you know, equal or good, that he won't start in the lineup on Thursday. Could he be in him by Saturday? Win or lose? Sure. Sure he could. They love him. They love his ability. They love his hunger for the puck. But let's see how it just plays out. My guess is to start, he won't be. And I'm okay with it.
All right, we're going to bring in Matt Doloff here in just a second. But before we do, I want to just, since we're talking about the lineup defensively, you know, Bruce Cassidy, you know, the pairings have been, you know, we know obviously it's Chara and McAvoy, you know, and we know kind of we've got Krug and we got Grizzlick, and then really the question seems to
be Holden or McQuaid.
Holden or McQuaid.
Yeah, and I think early on it comes down to the comfortability of left right. Is that what's more important, left right? Also the PK. Which one between Holden and McQuaid do they feel is a better penalty killer because of the electric power play of the Tampa of the Toronto Maple Leafs? Now, don't get me wrong, the Bruins have a good power play too, but lately the power play of Toronto, just like Boston, has been hot, maybe even hot. It's been hotter than Boston. So, you know, I'd like, I was having this talk with somebody yesterday at practice. I still like Grizz and Miller as a pair.
I do too.
And does the issue become then you don't get enough Torrey Krug? Meaning if you play him on the so-called third pair with either Holden or McQuaid, or do you just play 5D more and then you slot in that fifth, that sixth guy, the Holden or the McQuaid, as the sixth guy on certain situations, and you just play the other guys more? That's part of the quandary that they're in right now.
But again, against a team with, and look, Krug's got the speed to go with this team, but is he sound enough defensively to be out, you know, to be out there against this team in more than a third line role? I guess that's the question that I have about him. I like the combination. I trust McQuaid better than I trust Holden right now, and maybe that's because Holden just hasn't been here as long. But I would probably be my druthers in, you know, to start the series with McQuaid and Krug. And you know, Krug, I'm going to make him look, he's going to get a regular shift as the third pairing, but a little bit less, and I'm going to rely on him as part of the power play, and hope that he brings me the spark there, as opposed to, you know, trying to roll him out there on a second pair.
Well, fine, but you know, the question becomes with either McQuaid or with Holden. You see, I think we keep hearing about coaches want to roll their four lines. Both these coaches, both Babcock and Cassidy, and I do believe that they really do want to. You got to roll your D too. I think you have to. And you have to feel comfortable enough in the skating ability of your third pair that they can keep up in the pace. That may be the issue. That might be the determining factor for Bruce Cassidy. I'm leaning right now, leaning towards right-left. So that means McQuaid and I'm leaning what I think Bruce will do. I think I may put Holden in to begin, because of his skating ability, but I'm thinking because of his PK ability and the left-right factor that Adam McQuaid might get the start. Again, we'll know that, I think, tomorrow morning. Bruce is good about that stuff. He'll let us know. I mean, if I look at this lineup, you know, Matthews between Hyman and Nylander, that's your top line, right? They're going to go. Then your next line is Marlo Kadri and Mitch Marner. Those two lines are fast. You know, is Holden better equipped if he gets out there against those two lines to keep up with them, fleet of foot wise?
Sure.
Okay. Then
but I feel like he also makes bigger. I feel like he makes bigger mistakes at the same time too. Like he can, he's got better speed than McQuaid, but I also feel like he's made some, you know, some unforced errors here in the last few weeks.
But he gets traded. He gets moved away from his family. The team is playing 20 games in 4 days or whatever it was, something crazy, like 21 and 39 or something like that. I mean, whirlwind for him. McQuaid is a simpler. Now, on the other hand, practice yesterday, they were working on a lot of simple plays through the neutral zone, killing the rush, but also chipping it in. That's McQuaid's game. He's not going to do a ton with the puck. You do get more out of him on the PK, but on the other hand, Holden can be on a power play on your second unit. He gets the pucks at the line well, but he's playing his offside. How does that impact Krug, too, if you're pairing them? Now, you could, you know, do you end up seeing Grizzlick, and do they split up Miller and Grizz? I mean, I hope not, but they might. There's some questions here. But it's a deep lineup. As you look quickly at the Toronto Maple Leafs up front, deep lineup. Your third line is Tyler Bozak with JVR on the left, who's had a phenomenal year despite his 15 minutes a game. Babcock just doesn't trust him. You got Brown on the right side. And then your fourth line, Thomas Plekanec coming in, or Plekanec, if you want to say it like some of the Canadians do, with Uncle Leo Komarov, and then Kasperi Kapanen, who's, I'll tell you what, keep your, you think the Bruins have a good fourth line? Watch, keep this on Kapanen, folks. I'm telling you, on the fourth line, he can fly.
All right, let's bring in Matt Dolloff, 98.5thesportshub.com, is joining us here on the Extra Ice Time podcast, and has written some stuff about the Bruins here in the last couple of days, getting ready for Game 1 of the playoffs. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with Rick Nash, because we touched on him briefly before we brought you on here. You kind of raised the question on the website this week about which Rick Nash are we going to see? And Rick Nash has, throughout his career, been known as a terrific player, but the postseason numbers just haven't been there for one reason or another.
Yeah, he just hasn't measured up in the playoffs compared to what he's done in the regular season, that's for sure.
Why?
That's the big question. Right?
Billy's already not happy with this.
No, I'm not. I mean, we say he hasn't measured up. His team goes to the Stanley Cup final, and team plays well, and he's the go-to guy there. Do you take that in consideration, that he's, you know, the go-to, he's supposed to be the go-to guy? Here, he's not supposed to be. He's supposed to be a complimentary player.
Right.
I mean, do we hold that against him? Do we think that he screwed up as a member of the New York Rangers?
I think it's a little unfair to go all the way back to that 2014 run and say that's the Rick Nash you're going to get. That's what he does in the playoffs, because he was better in the two seasons after that. Mm-hmm. In 2015, he had 14 points in 19 games. You know? So I think we'd be happy with that, right?
He learned his lesson, so to speak.
Yeah.
See, here's the thing with Rick Nash you got to understand. He was a big-time player in a small town. Was it John Mellencamp wrote a song about this, right?
Born in a small town.
But, all right.
Every John Mellencamp song is about a small town. Right?
Yeah. Then he goes from there, Columbus, to New York to be the primetime player in the primetime town.
Right.
You know, I mean, look, I lived in New York. It's a nice sports town. It's not Boston. I'm from Chicago, too. Chicago's like Boston. They're better sports towns than New York. Don't let New Yorkers tell you any different. But they think they think that it is because it's so freaking big. Anyways, I digress. Well, here's the point. They wanted something gigantic in New York because of the money. Sounds like Krejci, right? Or Tuca,
sure,
type of thing. And because of the, oh, he scored 41 goals a couple of years before. Oh, he's this, oh, he's that. But he is a quiet, small-town kid, and his personality doesn't fit the big city.
It's just not in his nature to, you know, take the reins there?
I don't think so. I mean, it's not that he doesn't want to, but I think they wanted superstar.
Right. Yeah, they wanted a goal a game, basically.
Right.
I'm imagining what Brooksy and them wanted up there.
Right, and his personality is not that of, I'm going to wow you. You know, like, a guy like Brad Marchand could survive in New York and flourish because he's got
he loves the attention. Yeah,
he's fine with it. He's fine. It's not even, he's fine with it. And you get it. Now, Bergeron, I think, could handle anything anywhere, but just because that's how he is.
Mm.
But as far as the Rangers go, I mean, you said it, the second year, he learned. He changed his game. He made a difference. But you throw out some numbers that I'm sure on the, you know, in your article on the website that concerned fans.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the 10 points in 25 games, it's going to concern people. But I also pointed out in that story that he came within a Slava Voynov block shot of a game-winning goal for the Rangers in overtime.
Yep.
So, I mean, maybe they would have looked at him differently if they won that game, if they went on to win the cup, perhaps. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a little unfair to just jump back to that one season because he has produced more, and he was on a better line, a better fit for him when he was playing with Derek Brassard.
Yep.
And last year, or last time he was in the playoffs, which is, oh, it was last season, but he played with Mika Zibanejad, who's, you know, more of a two-way guy,
right.
good player, but not really, not the type of player that, like, Nash succeeds with. And I think he's in a much better spot being with David Krejci, and in addition to not having to be that go-to guy,
I just gotta be a
second-line guy.
I agree with you. I just got to see one thing, though. I got to see him play interior. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel awful that he suffered another concussion. Once you saw the hit, it was Paquette, was it almost 3.5-4 weeks ago. They caught him in Tampa. You know, once we saw that replay, you're like, whew, that was a heavy hit. He admitted, I kind of put myself in a bad spot, a little unprotected. Mm. But there can't be any hesitancy to his game. He's not a slow skater, but he's not quick, meaning he's not that, you know, he's not a darter out there, but he's a powerful, fast skater. He's got to get up to speed quickly, and he's got to play to the middle. If he does that, I'm good. If he doesn't, not going to be good.
He played a lot in the middle when he was playing with the Bruins.
Exactly.
I mean, hopefully you see more of that. I think he showed a lot of that in his first few games when he was lighting up the lamp a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting to the net, getting to the front, and, you know, Krejci was making passes, Torrey Krug. So, I mean, hopefully he does keep that up. It just sucks that he's coming back from the concussion, because now you got to worry about residual effects. You got to worry about, like you said, hesitating.
We can't have it. You can't have this team. This town, this team wants a long playoff run, and that won't. That won't help that if he's like that.
Well, and especially, look, you've talked about, Billy, the expectations aren't as high on him here as they were in New York because he's not the guy. But at the same time, he's the big acquisition at the trade deadline, you know, and people here are going to expect to see, you know, you might not be looking for a goal a night out of him, but if you're going to play with alongside David Krejci in the playoffs, you better be bringing your A game every night.
Yeah.
And the fans will notice if he's not.
Yeah, I think the question is, would you be satisfied with a 20 to 25 goal pace? Would you be happy with a goal every 3 to 4 games? Or do you want him to score at that 40-goal pace, you know, score every other night? So
I just want him to have an impact. I want him to take up so much ice, the attention of other players, everything. That, you know what? I mean, that Krejci can handle the puck more. I want him to, you know, get some rebound goals. I want some. I want DeBrusk, who's looked really good the last few days, a few games. I want him to get out. I think Rick Nash has been a nice impact on Jake DeBrusk too. I was talking about this with Judd the other day off the air, and he agrees that, you know, it's been a nice learning curve.
Two having martinis at home, talking.
No,
talking
we didn't make
hockey.
Martinis this time. No, just some wine and some bevies. So then you wrote another. You know, hey, you know, food and beverage. That's next to hockey. That might be actually that's above hockey, I think. But you wrote another little something else. Just to quickly hit on it. Just came out on zone starts for the Bees, especially because the Leafs give up a lot of new defensive zone opportunities or create a lot.
Right, yeah. I mean, I was just going through the numbers to see if there's any kind of glaring weakness on the Leafs, and what I found is they're near the bottom of the league in spending too much time in the defensive zone. They just spend way too much time down there. They're one of the worst teams in the league at, you know, allowing pressure and opportunities to the opposition. So, obviously, the Bruins got to take advantage of that. But what I thought was interesting is they're also third in the league in defensive zone face-off wins.
Efficiency,
which means, you know, they get out of there rather quickly, and if they can freeze the puck and get a face-off, there's a good chance that they're going to get the puck out of there. And what I realized, what I noticed in doing more research about it, is Mike Babcock has emphasized face-offs in the defensive zone more. He's used analytics to his advantage on this. He's mixed up the matchups. He's used a lot of different guys in his lineup. So, I mean, that's going to be something to watch for in the coaching matchup especially.
And so mostly we'll see in the D zone. My guess is you'll see a lot of Nazem Kadri in the D zone. Now we'll see Thomas Plekanec a lot.
He's been huge for him.
And he's and after a few slow start games for them, he's gotten himself into a better position with standing with Babs.
Yep.
You know the guy can take your face off. You know, I love Babs. It's just the voice is so funny, isn't
right,
it?
Yeah.
But you know, will you see Plekanec out there against Krejci in particular? Who knows? There's a lot of talk about Matthews going head to head on the road with Bergeron. Okay, good. I think for both teams, good. Let's go for it. That's awesome.
He's been very efficient in the faceoff, Matthews.
And Matthews has been more and more. especially in his own zone. And but I don't have it in front of me. Do they get a ton of zone starts? The own zone starts, Matthews? Is he putting him out there a lot?
He had a pretty good rate. I mean, he's like over 60% winning faceoffs. So, I mean, he's taken a good amount of faceoffs for, like, the number of games he's played. He only played, like, 62 games this year.
Okay.
So,
It's
mostly Nazem Kadri.
Yeah, Kadri, a ton of D-zone starts.
And he wasn't really known as a great faceoff guy, but this year he got over 50%. So, I mean, that just speaks to how much better the whole team's gotten, I think.
Yeah, well, that's something. And it's just his overall game, too. Nazem Kadri. Bruins fans already know that they're going to be – you better be ready to be pissed off by him, because he's going to do something that's going to be snarky, that's going to be cheap, that it's going to be, you know, like, are you kidding me? And it, by the way, so will Brad Marchand. So, you know,
he's essentially the Marchand of Toronto.
Right. It's but this is what a great rivalry should be about. You have a kind of a devil on both sides that you can learn to hate.
Yeah, I just think with the faceoff thing, it's just about sustaining pressure and maybe not letting Freddie Anderson freeze the puck as much, maybe force some rebounds, create more traffic, things like that. You know, just keep the pressure going. Don't let them get those faceoffs and those quick breakouts.
No,
you know?
and this is even more than that. They did this too much the last few games. Don't turn the puck over at the offensive blue line. They worked an awful lot on that yesterday in practice. They did a lot of wall play with regard to neutral zone regroup, transition back, and then chipping and chasing. Now, this might be a little more uncomfortable for the top two lines, because they're usually the lines that want to handle the puck skating in. I'm not saying dump and chase, but chip and chase. But to do that, you have to keep the puck along the wall. You've got to earn it back, and you can't allow the goaltender to freeze it.
Right. Toronto's one of the best teams in the league at getting behind the defense through the neutral zone with those quick passes and quick plays. I mean, they got to be on their toes.
The Bruins worked a ton on that, of killing that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Matt Doloff, 98.5thesportshub.com. Appreciate you stopping in.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Now let's turn up to north of the border and get the Maple Leaf side of things coming into game one of the series.
This is a hot take. This is a quick hot take here on the new extra shift, Shanny. John Shannon, Roger Sportsnet. RJ, this guy, he absolutely knows everything there is to know about Toronto Maple Leafs.
Really? All right, so 1932.
Well,
who was the third?
Actually, no, he's not.
What's going on, John?
How are you, boys?
Doing well and excited for the start of this series. I guess from the Leafs' perspective, how do you see this matchup? And, you know, I think a lot of people down here are, you know, have, at least from my perspective, have looked at the Leafs as a significant challenge for the Bruins. I would imagine it goes both ways.
It does. I do think that there's a lot more confidence this year with this hockey club than there was last year going into the playoffs against the Washington Capitals, though, simply because this team is, you know, a year older. Guys like Austin Matthews and William Nylander and Mitch Marner have an extra year of truly high intense hockey on their side. The addition of Patrick Marleau, the experience of a veteran player that's played more than 1,500 games in the NHL, has certainly helped. And Freddie Anderson, a guy who seems to have the Bruin number in goal, I think gives the Maple Leafs a lot of confidence going into TD Garden tomorrow night.
You know, you get a guy like Austin Matthews in your roster, and he's been injured a bit, but it's still a point a game player. From somebody who saw him on a day in, day out basis, like yourself, is this guy at the level of a Connor McDavid in the sense of, you know, he is an uber star in the NHL, or is he not ready, not quite there just yet, John?
Oh, no, no. He's if he's not there, Billy, he can certainly see it from where he is. I'll tell you what, he doesn't have the speed that McDavid does, but he's more of a physical force than Connor is. He certainly has as good a hands as Connor does. I think he shoots the puck better than Connor McDavid. And I think that'll be the biggest factor. This is a guy that he's never played the game with brute force, but never had to. He just uses his body so well. In the modern NHL, where it's more about angles and position, for a kid who is, you know, a teenager, He plays a very strong, instinctive game. He's going to be a force in this series.
All right, we only got you for a couple of minutes here. Do the Maple Leafs have enough on the back end, John? Do they have enough on their D crew that you're confident, or that they should be confident, that they can handle the Boston Bruins through a seven-game series?
That's the Achilles heel, Billy. And that becomes, I think the onus goes on the Bruins. I think if the Bruins forwards, and that's all four lines, mm-hmm. can continue to put pressure on guys like Jake Gardner and young Travis Dermott, then the Bruins will prevail. But it's up to the Bruins to put that pressure on. It's not, if the Maple Leafs are allowed to get out of their own zone with ease, then it's going to be a track beat. And I think that's one thing that Bruce Cassidy's team wants to avoid.
I asked Billy earlier in the show today about his confidence level in Tuukka Rask. I'll ask you, what would be your confidence level in Anderson?
I think the goaltending battle is a wash. Both guys are elite goaltenders. That's not where this series will be won or lost. Both goaltenders will do their best. Both goaltenders will make spectacular saves. The team that wins will not have to worry about goaltending, and neither will the team that loses.
Do we make too much about Mike Babcock as a head coach? Now that you've had a couple of years up there to watch him work up close, he has one Stanley Cup to his title. Yes, he has a couple of other nice international things on his resume. But is he like the Dalai Lama of NHL head coaches, in your opinion?
He has an aura. There's no question about that, Billy. He has an aura, and you guys will see it in full force for the next three or four days. And, you know, there's nobody more prepared. There's nobody more relentless in the game right now than Mike Babcock. Whether that makes him the best coach, that'll remain to be seen, simply because I'm not sure he has all the best players. It'll be the depth of the Maple Leafs against the depth of the Bruins. And last I checked, Mike Babcock doesn't play the game.
Speaking of depth, a few guys that jump out at me depth-wise that some people might not know about. Tell me if you agree that these could have important roles. Zach Hyman, I'm a big fan of his. I know him from his days at Michigan, but also just the way he plays. How about a guy like Leo Komarov? I mean, here's a veteran type of player, too, that I think on his fourth-line role could have an impact. And then Thomas Plekanec. Bruins fans know him well, having been in Montreal.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Plekanec, but the one thing I will tell you about Hyman is when he plays with Matthews and Nylander, he does all the heavy lifting in the corners, and he's done a great job, and he's gotten better every game, Billy.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the end, and this is what Babcock will tell you, is that Leo Komarov is the guy that they want Bruin fans to hate, like Leaf fans hate Brad Marchand. Now, he doesn't score like Brad Marchand, but that's going to the villain in blue and white will be Leo Komarov.
Not Kadri.
Bruin fans will see that game one.
Really? Not Kadri? You don't think Kadri?
No, because Nas has got too much, he's got too much important scoring goals, too. This is a guy who's got more than 30 goals.
Mm-hmm.
We forget that. Leo Komarov's going to be the disturber.
And then you made one comment that I just got to follow up on. Why not Thomas Plekanec? Have you not been overly impressed? Have you just been okay with him? What fueled that comment a moment ago?
I think he's just been okay. You know, and perhaps playoff hockey will rejuvenate it. I mean, at this point, I think that's a trade that was made at the deadline that I would describe as neutral.
Interesting. Okay. Good to know.
All right, John Shannon, Sportsnet up in Canada. We appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you maybe later on in the playoff series.
Thanks, Shanny.
Anytime, boys. Enjoy the playoffs.
You too, buddy.
You too. All right, he joins us here on the Extra Ice Time podcast. We've only got a few minutes left, Billy.
Yeah.
As we get ready for game one of the first round.
All right, do we want to do one or two questions that came in or not?
Yeah, if we got a few questions, we can pop those in. We got a few minutes to go.
All right, let's see here. We have one coming from I don't know, Henry. I'm never good with this stuff right here. he's out of Nova Scotia, Henry.
All right.
But he asked us about, do you believe that Donato should be in the lineup for game one? He feels that if Riley Nash can't play, I put Achari on the fourth line instead of Wingles and Donato on the third line with Heinen and Backes. We already touched on that, but I don't know. I don't see that to begin with. I don't If you're putting him on the third line, then you're putting Backes in the middle, and I just don't think that's the optimal spot for him. And then you're putting Donato on the right wing, and I just don't think that's the optimal spot for him. So now I've got a third line with two guys in less than optimal positions.
Right.
I just don't see it.
Here's one from Christopher. Says, do the Bruins have enough secondary scoring beyond the Bergeron line to go all the way? Depth is it's so key in the playoffs, as we know. And when you're matched up against, you know, especially on the road, as we've talked mm-hmm. about some of the matchups in this series, when you're going to be matched up against the top defensive line on any given night, do those second, third, and fourth lines have enough pop?
Well, a few names. That's where Rick Nash, David Krejci
yep.
Need to come through. Obviously, DeBrusk, but I want my vets, you know, Nash and Krejci to come through. And that's where I think that third line, I mean, Heinen, who's had a nice year offensively, I wouldn't call it spectacular, but I'd call it pretty damn good. You know, you need to get him and Backes involved. Now, the fourth line was finishing for a while. They were creating. I mean, Schaller with a career year, Achari with a dozen goal or with 10 goals too. But I think that, you know, I mean, yeah, they're going to have to come through. Can they outperform the fourth line of the Maple Leaf? I think so. I think the Bruins can. But that, to me, it's the second line in particular, and those three guys, the Krejci line, that I need to see producing offensively.
Nick wants to know, who has the most pressure on the Bruins to perform well in this series, aside from Tuukka Rask? Because we talked about him earlier, and, you know, the pressure that he feels, and you talked about that with him yesterday.
Yeah.
Who else really has weight on their shoulders in this series, do you think?
I'll say Krejci, Rick Nash, and Backes. And then on the back end, Torrey Krug. He's got, you know, I think he's going to have to perform. I mean, he's been after a slow start because of the injuries and coming back, I think he's been great. I think he's fulfilled his role. They need to see him fulfill his role even more.
This is a seven-game series, isn't it?
I have it as seven.
Has to be.
I have it as seven games. I have it. I had to fill this out today for the NHL Network in the morning. I had to do it, and I struggled with it. But I love this for the Bruins, this first round, because it's going to get their attention. It's going to get them ready. It's going to get them going. I got Bruins in seven.
I do, too. All right. Well, all right, first Extra Ice Time podcast is in the books. We are going to make this a regular thing during the playoffs, so be sure to subscribe to the Hockey Show podcast. Obviously, we'll still be doing the show on Saturday mornings with the whole gang from 9 till 11, but we'll be doing this probably midweek each week as the playoffs go on. And
we'll try, and if there's a chance we can even do it twice quickly, 2:30 minutes.
I'll do as many as we can do.
We'll hit them up. All right, buddy.
Talk. All right.